But you know, like Seinfeld in the early to mid 90s really captured this essence of being single in the city and the way synchronicity works in all our lives and stuff. And it really kind of captured that kind of thing. Friends captured the interactivity between, you know, 20 somethings trying to figure their lives out. That 70s show kind of, I mean, 70s show brought in, was part of this new era. I think that 70s show and Big Bang Theory kind of are on the same vein. Where it's like, that 70s show was like a catalyst for like that hipster, vintage, you know, the irony of the jokes, because the show is made now, or at least modern, you know, whatever you call it, modern times, but set in the 70s, there's a lot of irony to, like, when, what's his face, Feldman?
Yeah, Foreman.
Foreman. When Foreman is into, really into Star Wars, it's funny because we can look back at it, right? There's a certain nostalgic irony to all the jokes, right? Mm-hmm. You know? So I think for the change in culture that went to this kind of hipstery kind of culture, where we kind of, we're always ironic about the things we like and this kind of, like, sarcastic, sarcastic normalcy where, you wear the thin tie so long because you're trying to make fun of the 80s, but then it just becomes what you wear and who you are.
We're listening to Foreskin Radio.
You know what I mean? Like,
I'm a walking joke.
With Professor Best Testes.
You know, but you're wearing it for...
And Dr. the Galatopus.
Mm-hmm. And then... Or the mustache, you know, when guys wear that 70s mustache, you're like, yeah, look at me, man. I'm like Ron Burgundy.
Oh my God, dude. Downtown, right? I've seen like a few guys with the long ass mustache, a twist at the end.
Yeah.
And, shit.
And you do, at first you start doing it as kind of an irony, like throwing it like, yeah, I'm being countercultural, right? Like I'm throwing it back in the face of pop culture, right? This is the way people used to do things, and now I'm doing it out of context of, like, historical norm...
The professor has a lot of insight into... Right?
It's out of
culture.
Place. So when I do it, it's, like, totally ironic and, like, weird, right?
He's kind of hip. He thinks, you know, this guy.
That goes away.
He thinks a lot.
Because, like, after a month or two of you twisting your mustache, that's just who you are now.
Mm-hmm.
You are now just a guy in the 2000s.
Yeah, I kind of like to... this is the Dixon Chains podcast, by the way.
Right.
In case there's any confusion.
You're part of the bigger archetype.
I sometimes like to draw in the other shows that are part of my world.
Kind of jokiness. You know, like the guys that wear the glasses. But like
share them with you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's what I'm doing here this Saturday morning on Bluffers Park.
And now it's just fashion. Right? Now the younger generation...
Got my thermos of coffee.
And they just, you know, just take it as fashion.
Right? And just getting started into a new Dixon Jeans podcast. What, 369?
Was wearing her skater punk clothes and the tie, right? Remember when all the little girls used to wear the fucking tie, right? I'm being rebellious, right?
You're being a conformist.
Right, but the rebellion quickly fades away. That feeling of rebellion is gone, and now it's just a fashion statement. It's just a part of... the thing.
Leave it. Gonna tune it out there. I recommend if you're not, it's another one of those. I guess it's a bit like the Dixon Jane's podcast in some way. You gotta put a little effort into listening. Get into the characters. Get into what he's trying to do. You know, it's an acquired taste. Some people are gonna say, I don't have time for this shit. You know, it's an hour and a half. A couple of guys just rapping, just talking. But that's the thing that I think is what's missing in our culture. We just don't have time for anything anymore. Our time is chopped up into these, you know, segments, especially by television. And now I would say even, you know, the internet with YouTube and everything else. Bam, it's got to be quick, got to be fast. I don't have time to go through a whole fucking 18 minutes. I need 3 minutes, 4 minutes, whatever, you know. And to actually engage in conversation. That's kind of hard to do. I mean, we're just too busy. And I do not think this is a good direction. I mean, you got to look back in the old days. And yeah, all right, before all the distractions of technology and these fucking cell phones, smartphones, people had to just, you know, haul out a book and read. Now, I'm the guiltiest of all because I'm sitting here with a little black bag, and I got two books I picked up off the shelf today. I was so happy. In my room, I've got a stack of books. I've got a library. I've got a library in a hallway. I've got my special Beat and Henry Miller and Beatles library. And then I've got another whole row of books upstairs that, oh, yeah, they're sort of in the middle of reading, you know. I mean, I'll start a book and then I'll put it down. I'll pick up another one and I'll go back to the other one. So I just hauled out today the Tipping Point, Malcolm Gladwell book, a fascinating book that makes you see the world in a different way, how little things can make a big difference. And I'm only maybe a third of the way through. And I just thought, oh, I'll haul that out. And, of course, the other book I brought with me was one I've already read, but this is a new copy, Desolate Angel, a blockbuster of biography, absolutely magnificent. Jack Kerouac, The Beat Generation in America by Dennis McNally. And I thought, yeah, I'm due for a little refresher on the Beats because that shapes so much of our world today, and there's just so many people just in ignorance. Again, I tease my students, you know, have you ever heard of Timothy Leary? Of course they're not. They haven't even heard of Gandhi. They haven't heard of, who was it we did the other day? I was talking to Dave Broadbeck about this. All kinds of really important people. They just don't know, you know. They know Martin Luther King. That was all. But the problem is, in that same book bag that I carried with me, I've got my iPad. And I don't really use my iPad for reading, except for fucking Facebook. God damn. Facebook and Twitter, I don't know why. But I'm constantly pulling my finger down. Like it's become like a Pavlovian reflex, you know, I just pull it down, pull it down, pull it down, refresh the page, refresh the page, refresh the page. There's another story, another link, another link. And that's all I end up doing. It's like having a remote control and just continually flicking channels. And at the end, you're dissatisfied. What the fuck did I learn? What did I get out of that? So I'm actually one of my worst enemies. You know, I bring these books to say, okay, it's time to get down to some serious reading. And, you know, talking about valuing the conversation and what it means. Now, I will do that. I'll do that over a beer. The conversation's not a problem for me. But I've really just cut into my reading time with all this other shit that I wish I had more discipline to abandon. The crap that comes up to the surface, you know, and just dig deep. Adam, earlier in the podcast, the reason I got hooked in was he'd gone into the gone camping, I guess, for a couple of weeks, but kind of, you know, bush-like experience with a couple of friends. And I tweeted something that he had said. He needed to reconnect with the universe, sort of to be refreshed and invigorated by it. And it was good. It was a good line, and I need that. Like, stepped out of the house this morning and thought, oh, shit, it's a long weekend. I've even got Tuesday off. It's an extra long weekend. Instead of worrying about all this marking I have to do, why didn't I plan a camping trip? I haven't been camping for so long. I mean, tent camping, fire, cooking on the fire. So instead, I'm going to read you something I cut out of the newspaper. Now, I haven't been able to figure this out, and maybe some of you can. I like to think I actually am. Am I shouting? I'm sorry. Quite enlightened. Like, no, not enlightened. No. But, you know, tolerant, current, understanding, broad-minded, you know, open to new ideas, understanding things. And yet, I'm sure if you listen long enough, you find, no, man, you sound like an old man with an awful lot of prejudices. You know, I harp on the fact that there is a prayer room meant for Muslims only. It doesn't say that. It just says prayer room or something like that. But it's set up in such a way that you would not dare walk into that room unless you were a Muslim. This is where you go to say your prayers. It's divided. There's a curtain. Women on one side, men on the other. Shoes off here. Carpet's here. Boom. That's right across from the washroom that has a basin for washing your foot. No other washroom in the entire college has a foot basin to wash your feet before you pray. And, of course, that just says, wait, whoa, I thought this whole college was secular and so on. I bring this up because our current federal government, which we all love to hate, the Harper government, I think it'll always be referred to as the Harper government. They've just cut, I guess, funding for all other denominations of religious people who, in the Canadian prison system. But they've left the Christian chaplains, whoever. But anybody else, you're shit out of luck. We're not paying to have all these other denominations, religious groups funded. And I'm thinking, whoa, I don't have a problem with that, except there should not be funding for the Christians either. Whoa, it's all or nothing, and let's go for the nothing. Sorry. If somebody wants to come in, you know, and it's paid for by some congregation outside, not federal government funding, but some other group raises money and they want to bring in an imam or a Catholic priest or whoever, and there is such a room available and you can come up with some system, you know, or are people going to arrange to have meetings, private talks, you know, on visiting day or something? Okay. But the fact that they cut the funding for everybody except the Christians, whoa, that ain't right, you know? So I'm just saying, I think a lot of people are going, oh, you got to fund the others. I'm like, no, don't fund any of them. Christ Almighty, hey. Anyway, sorry, Christ Almighty, is that appropriate? Should I have said something else? Almighty Allah, maybe? I don't know. School board issues transgender guidelines. So this is the one I can't quite get my head around. When I have trouble understanding an issue where, if I'm dealing with a difficult mediation and I'm trying to think, well, what's right in this case? I very often ask my son, what do you think? What's your opinion? I really like to tune into his 20-year-old mind, and it's always a good awakening for me. And I won't tell you what he said about this until I read it to you and see if you can help me understand. School board issues, transgender guidelines. This would be the Toronto School Board. Students should use washroom that matches their identity, TDSB says. That's the Toronto District School Board. Toronto District School Board has introduced a new set of guidelines that spell out what kind of accommodation the board must offer to transgender and gender nonconforming students and staff. That's in quotes. So just in case you missed it, transgender and gender nonconforming students and staff. The policy says schools must keep a student's gender nonconformity or transgender status confidential and should never disclose it to a parent or guardian without consent from the student. Okay, so you're not allowed to call up mom, Mrs. So-and-so, your son is in the wearing a dress again and is in this lady's washroom or whatever. Your son, daughter, your whatever, you know. It is strongly suggested that staff privately ask transgender or gender nonconforming. Now, you see, I don't even know gender nonconforming. I mean, I can guess what it means, but I didn't know this was a big issue in the school board. Strongly suggested that staff privately ask transgender or gender nonconforming students at the beginning of the school year how they want to be addressed in correspondence to the home or at meetings with the students' parents, guardians, caregivers, the policy says. It also says students and staff have the right to use a washroom that, quotation mark, best conforms to their gender identity, without having to, quote, prove their gender. Schools must also offer an accessible all-gender single-stall washroom for any employee or student who needs increased privacy, quotation marks. Okay, once more. Students must also offer an accessible all-gender single-stall washroom for any employee or student who needs increased privacy. The guidelines were created as a result of a student's recent human rights complaint, said board spokesman Ryan Bird. A student was experiencing some difficulties with accessing programs and services specific to his gender identity. The student was provided an accommodation at the school, and as part of the settlement, the board developed these accommodation guidelines, Bird said. A number of the guidelines have been used on a case-by-case basis before, but Bird said this is the first time they've been officially spelled out in school board policy. The guidelines, along with a fact sheet of common questions and answers, have been posted on the board's website. Ooh, I'll have to check that out. Bird said the guidelines are being distributed to staff to use as a resource when requests for accommodation come up. Policy also deals with the use of pronouns in addressing transgender people and specifies that dress codes should be flexible so that students don't have to choose between male or female clothing. Now, this is a school board that, boy, it's got a high failure rate. It's got buildings in states of decay. It's over budget. There are just any number of issues. Teachers are refusing to do extracurricular activities right now for reasons I'm sure Anthony Marco would be delighted to explain to you, an issue with the provincial government's law. Lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of big problems. I deal with students every single fucking day who cannot read or write. They have passed through the Ontario high school system. They've graduated right here in Toronto, and they don't have any decent fucking literacy skills. And yet, this becomes a big issue. Now, I'm sure. I'd love somebody else to weigh in on this and explain it, because I don't want to go much further with that other than my son just saying, what the fuck, you know? Hey, this is never an issue. He's only recently out of high school. What is that all about? This has never come up. Well, of course, it's supposed to be confidential and private, but having a special washroom set aside for people who are transgender or gender nonconformity. Well, I wonder what the where that will fit into the budget, you know? Maybe they'll have to give up one of the washrooms and just a single stall. Anyway, I needed to share that with you because I cannot quite get my head around it. And it may be a reflection of the times, and it may be that, hey, I just got to get with the program. I'm way behind the times. I do realize, and I want to say this right up front, holy Christ, and I tell my students, when we were in high school, we were cruel and merciless to anybody who was different. If you're ugly, if you're borderline retarded, if you were, I don't think we used the word gay back then, a homo, you were teased cruelly and mercilessly. And I'm really glad to say we've come a very long way. And students, although are still cruel, and now the cruelty and teasing extends right onto Facebook and across the board 24/7, I think more people would likely be called on it. You know, I think in our day it was sort of like, oh, you'd almost think it was like Jew baiting, you know, like, hey, if, you know, it takes one dumb guy in the class to pick on one other person, and then all the other people have to decide, gee, I'd rather be on the side of the guys who are stronger, because I don't want to be the guy being teased, you know. And it's like, I keep going to this South American, Central American, Eastern European prison system where the poor little flunky of a jailer who hears the screams down the hall is thinking, thank God it's not me, and I'm not going to do anything to piss off the capitan or anybody else because I don't want to be in that guy's cell, chained and manacled and tortured with electric wires and so on. Oh, my God. So, in other words, in some ways, we've come a very, very long way. And this may be, the thing I've just read to you, may be very progressive and a very good thing. I just can't get my head around it. I would just rather, well, just a non-issue. Just, geez, you know, who? Nobody wants to take a shit at school anyway. It's a filthy place. It's horrible. Oh, God, I've done 20 minutes already, and I haven't even begun to touch on, you know, many times I think, why don't you just put out a few short 20-minute shows a la Anthony Marco and be done with it? But another voice says, no, you know, you stuck to that policy. You got a one-hour show once a week, put in some music. They seem to like it well enough. We got a new listener, by the way, John somebody from somewhere. Actually even posted a comment, and I'm just delighted. Holy fuck, a listener, a new listener? Thank you so much. It just amazes me. Wow. But having said that, listen, if you happen to know of anybody, it's not that I'm looking for more listeners, but the fact that I know I am losing listeners, if you could just kind of balance it out, if you know somebody who might like the vibe, the kind of thing I'm trying to do here on the Dixon James podcast, which is, in case you knew and don't know, stay as fucking honest as I can, goddammit. I'm just trying my fucking best to be authentic. Yeah, that was a little bit of drama, I admit, but you know what I mean. To be honest, to just to be who I am, to let it all out, to spill it all out, and let the chips lie where they may. 50 years of Bond, love it, gotta love it, can't wait to see the new one, and 50 years since, was it Love Me Do, that first Beatles song? Okay. I gotta go. We gotta go. I gotta go and do some marking. So thank you for listening. As always, been a great pleasure. And we'll get something else a little different in the next segment. Stay tuned. Here's a song for as a reward for your listening thus far. Bye for now.
The news is out. Oh. All over town that you've been seen out running around. I know that I should leave, but then I just can't go. This heart of mine could never see what everybody knows but me. Just trust in you. My great sin. What can I do? You win again.
Speaking of Twitters, I started recently following J.K. Langtry's Twitter, and...
Big mistake.
You know, it was very fascinating because you hear little tidbits like most disorganized penis contest, penis, what would it be called? What would they call it?
Penis competition.
Penis contest, competition ever. So how do they, how would, what, just... Go. Penis competition, go.
Where did the penis competition let you down?
In a lot of departments.
Was the competition hard?
No.
It's extremely hard to get hard in front of a giant group of people when nothing sexy is happening at all.
So set the stage. So it's at the M4, the swinger club, on a Monday. It was Monday, right?
Yeah.
So Monday evening penis competition. Is this the first time ever? Do they do these regularly?
Yes, the first time ever. It's so badly disorganized.
And you were judged hard? That was the deal?
I think that joke's passed.
No. I wasn't sure if that was a joke, because he said it was hard to get hard, and I wasn't sure I wanted to know.
They were supposed to be judged hard for most of it, but that did
but
not.
But no one could get hard.
So there's no porn, nothing like
that? No.
And there's no fluffers. They said there might be fluffers to, like, blow you so you could get hard. There was none.
The only reason anyone entered.
And like, maybe four guys could get, like, hard, like, the entire time.
Well, I was going to say, if you're going to
take your... Out of 12.
If you're going to really take this seriously, Codename J, you could fluff them if you give a shit so much.
Well, me.
Yeah.
See, and that's favoritism. I don't know why I agree with that at all.
Are you one of the four that were hard the entire time?
No. No, it's really hard. Like, yeah, and then you start thinking about, like...
Up top, Craig.
I'm barely hard right now. It is
tell
hard.
Me how you're, tell me how it's really hard.
Yeah, as soon as you start thinking about how you can't get an erection,
it's done.
Yeah, you're like, you're done.
So how many people were in this thing?
12.
12 is pretty
and
good.
And only, what,
out.
Two dropped out in the middle of it?
What, really?
They were so embarrassing.
Yeah, pretty much, I think.
Did they still hang out, or did they leave immediately?
No, the one guy stayed. He was the first one that quit, number 11.
Okay, I think we'll just step in here. I just want you to know that I have an eclectic taste in podcast listening, you know. A few standbys. That, of course, for those of you who might not know, is the one and only... Vinyl Countdown, and quite a podcast it is. I'm a religious listener. My God, I don't think I've missed a single episode from its day of inception at the Imperial Pub when we used to have our live podcaster nights, which sadly has kind of died away. It didn't quite gel. That was the kind of a podcast that could be done live before an audience and get people in. And we were, at that time, doing a podcast called, it is now history, I'm afraid. Thanks, Brent. The Gappage podcast. And Gappage was kind of intimate and quiet and serious. And so we were better if we were alone. There's no point in being at a gathering. And so it just kind of went. But maybe it'll get revived. You know, maybe try something different. I don't know. Anyway, it is this same Saturday. This might be a one-shot podcast because I've just made plans to meet the lovely Lisa at the Only Cafe tonight. And Brian will likely show up a little later on. But I'm back. I did some marking. Not enough, but I did some. And I'm now back in Bluffers Park, but while I was in my office where I did my market, I picked up two more books, one on restorative justice called Transforming Society, and I did that as kind of a refresher, just to, you know, to keep my faith up in what it is I'm doing in these justice circles when we deal, because I'm doing more and more and more of them. I'm getting called in, and a lot of them are really, really... tough cases where, you know, kids have just so many strikes against them right from the get-go. It's very, very hard for them to, you know, get a fair shot at life and get going. And so they end up getting in lots of trouble. And in most cases, almost all, there is no father in the picture. And it's very, very sad when that happens. So anyway, I'm going to review. I'm going to carve out some time to keep that damn television turned off. And reread Restorative Justice. But the other book I picked up is called The Complete Idiot's Guide to Understanding Islam. I really need to be more tolerant, more understanding, more empathetic, maybe just a little more open-minded about this religion, because... the thing is, okay, it's not just this religion in particular. I'm against it. It's all fucking religions that make you believe in such nonsense. And it drives me nuts. And this one seems even more hardline than the fucking Catholics. And I think that's my problem. Like, I wasn't brought up a Catholic. So here, let me just rewind just a little bit. You, to a large degree, you can't escape your upbringing. You know, you can rebel. But you're going to come back, it's going to shape you a lot. And I grew up in white, middle-class, post-war Canada. Bam, that's who I am. I had a comfortable enough life. I had kind and loving and caring parents who provided well for all of us. I also want to say, it is Thanksgiving weekend. And although I called my last previous podcast thankful... I do want to give thanks on this podcast for the blessings I have. I really feel at this point in my life, my God, I don't know why. The past few years have been good. I'm happy with my job, my teaching. I like the teaching. I know I'll bitch and complain about marketing and this and that. But to step into a class and engage students, to interact with people, make them laugh, make them think, challenge them. God, I love that. You're alive. You're interacting with people. My, what more could you want? And the same goes for the mediation. It's an inquiry. Take it down, take it down, take it down. It's one person and maybe their mother or somebody sitting across from you at a table and they're in pain and they've done something bad and they're in trouble and you got to work with them and find a way to help them and find a course of action that's going to steer them on a better path. And you got to listen and you got to challenge and you got to call them on their bullshit. I love doing that. And I wanted to add that I've got a brother and sister. I love both of them. I hardly ever see. I'm so selfish that I've really carved out a life for myself in Toronto, and I very seldom get back to the Ottawa area to visit my brother, my sister, and their children. And, you know, they've always been good to me. We get along. Maybe Thanksgiving, usually we'd get together, but we never invite people up here. We're going to do our own thing. I've really lived a separate life. After I finished university in Montreal, I left my parents' home in 72 and went out to Vancouver. And really, I've kind of been away since then. That's, what, 30, 40 years now. I'm just apart from the family. And I would just like to say publicly, I'm very grateful for growing up in a great environment with a good family. And what a blessing that is. Man, oh, man. Something I should never forget. Meanwhile, why does God punish? This is one of the early chapters in this book. It's a very interesting book because they talk an awful lot about the amazing, you know, Islam in its heyday and the educated people who taught so much about science and math and, you know, the good old days of Islam when people were educated and that was the goal. But I randomly flipped it open, and here's, at the end of every chapter, am I shouting again? I'm sorry. Yeah, let's take it down. I apologize. I'm sorry. It's hard on your ears. You're probably getting irritated. The chapter summary, The Least You Need to Know, tells you what we've just covered, okay? Muslims believe in a day of judgment where all injustice will be paid back and no one will be treated unfairly. Well, you see, I can't swallow that to start with. Islam teaches that heaven is eternal, whereas a person's sentence in hell can range from temporary to forever, depending on his or her crimes. Oh, God damn it. Fucking heaven and hell? Gee, oh, no. Sorry. I'm supposed to be a little open-minded here. Heaven is presented as an ideal adult playground with the best delights in food, comfort, friendship, activities, environment, and physical pleasures of all kinds. Jesus Christ! Who the fuck believes in a fucking heaven like that? We got it here on Earth now, but Jesus, you can any thinking adult... Oh, gee, I'm sorry. Some people do believe this. Perhaps a billion people believe this. And who am I to say a billion people must be wrong and I'm right? Well, sorry, a billion people are wrong and I'm right. There is no fucking heaven. There is no fucking hell other than what we have right here on Earth now. Damn, I'm not good at this at all. I'm trying so hard to be open-minded and accepting. And there must be something wrong with me. Hell is described in great detail in Islam. Punishments there often mimic crimes done in this life. Anyone who has any small amount of faith in God will eventually be released and admitted to heaven. Whew. Don't even want to think about the punishments. Here's the preceding little paragraph. Why does God punish? Hell is not the province of a cruel God. It serves a purpose, to purify warped souls. Okay, that's the purpose of hell. Purify warped souls. You got one of those? Once a woman and her son were sitting in a gathering listening to the Prophet Muhammad as he gave a sermon. The child wandered away from his mother and tried to put his hand in the fireplace. The mother instinctively snatched her child away to safety. She thought for a moment about what she had done and asked the Prophet how Allah could punish those he loved in hell when she was a mother, wanted to protect her little one. The prophet bowed his head and cried softly, and then answered her by saying that Allah does not like to punish. He punishes only those who have rejected him and committed evil actions. Wouldn't the mother also punish her son when he did wrong? Thus, we find the purpose of hell reiterated. Okay, if we have been cast into hell temporarily but have finished our sentence, the angels will relocate and remove us, though we will be mere charred skeletons by then. Oh, dear. Ooh. A substance called the water of life will be poured over us, and our bodies will regenerate and be restored to us as good as new. Well, I didn't know. I had no idea. Finally, we will be escorted to paradise and given our full rewards for any good we might have done. Thank God. Who will stay in hell forever? Only God knows, and he is never unjust. The lowest level of hell is for the worst inmates who will have no way out of it ever. Sounds like Catholicism. A lot of ways, this heaven and hell business. And I guess, you know, maybe in the old days, to make people shape up and behave, you had to teach such concepts? Is that right? Whenever I read about hell, my mind goes back to these South American jails. Maybe I was in another lifetime. Maybe I was a jailer. Maybe I was an inmate. Maybe I was a cruel capitan. I don't know. But I think there are people living in hell right now on earth. People unjustly imprisoned. People being tortured. People being whipped. So the idea of heaven and hell, I get, but it's now. Like, and I don't know why there's this after place. And in a lot of ways, well, no, I can't say I'm in heaven. I'm in a good place, but I mean, I'm not going to call it heaven when you compare what this version of heaven is like. There's no dancing with the devil here. Uncovering the real story about jihad. I got to read that one. What is an iman? Lots of things about everything, the history of it. And I guess the last section was very, very interesting. Of just Islam today and whether we can get along in Europe and, you know, whether they even cover Salman Rushdie in here. Maybe the very end of the book. Muslims are looking for redress for a century of humiliation and oppression that has been directed against them. Okay. The two main issues that cause Muslims worldwide to oppose Israel are the injustice against the Arabs inherent in Israel's founding and the status of Jerusalem. The Iranian Revolution was more of a political movement against a despot than an Islamic struggle. Okay. The Muslim world is in such turmoil as a consequence of the legacy of colonialism. Okay, it's our fault again. I say our because that is me. Islamic revivalism is not a danger to the West. Muslims are seeking mainly to get responsible government in their countries. The future of relations between Islam and the non-Muslim world is bright with many positive possibilities. Well, that's good to know. That's good to know. Back previous to that, Muslims are in general peace-loving people who look to their faith to help solve the problems that confront us all in daily life. As you have learned, Islam is not a religion of hate or violence, but is a way of life that brings out the best in its sincere followers. My prayer is that, as the future unfolds, Muslims and non-Muslims can gain a greater appreciation for what Islam is actually about. All right. And that would be mine, too. But the thing is, I want to be allowed my view to believe that all religion is a crock of shit. There is no God. There is no heaven and hell. The future of mankind should not be, in my opinion, based on people blindly following rules that were written down, dictated according to this book, because the Prophet Muhammad was illiterate and had to have other people write his words down and memorize them and pass them on. And people who take that literally just the way those stupid Christians in the south of them, in America, throughout the world, take the Bible literally, this is just not the way to go. And I really do feel those voices of, you know, echoing the things I'm saying, or I'm echoing the things other people say, are in danger of being silenced out of fear. I would certainly never bring this up at my college. Oh, my God, no, I'd be fired for that. And that's fair game, you know, hey, don't stir things up. Here's a chapter, Islam and Other Religions. Build more churches. The least you need to know, Islam accepts the virgin birth of Jesus. Oh, well. And his role as Messiah to the Jews. The Quran, however, denies that he is God or the Son of God, rather considering him to be a prophet. Fair enough. I'm in agreement there. Muslims do not believe that Jesus was crucified. Oh, Muslims do not believe that Jesus was crucified, nor that the Romans killed him in Jerusalem. Muslims hold that God answered Jesus' prayer and removed him from the physical world to await the end times and a triumphant return to earth. I didn't know that. Christianity and Islam have had many centuries of interfaith dialogue, interspersed with wars and periods of mutual fear and mistrust. True enough. European Christians completely occupied the Muslim world during the era of colonialism and targeted Islam for suppression. The Islamic resurgence today is merely an attempt by Muslims all over the world to regain their religion, okay? Fair game. Fair game. The secular governments of most Muslim countries oppose the meaningful practice of Islam by their populace. The secular governments of most Muslim countries oppose the meaningful practice of Islam by their populace. In other words, secular governments are not the way to go. Governments should be under the influence of the Islamic faith. Okay, all right. Are Muslims idol breakers? That's an interesting one. Yeah, the Taliban thing. Remember, I bitched about this. I really went nuts over this when I said that the Taliban had, 20 minutes already, had blown up those things. Recently, the extremist political group known as the Taliban, who rule Afghanistan as of this writing, became the object of a lot of international criticism for their decision to destroy the ancient Buddha statues in the Bamiyan Valley. It's driven me nuts. Everyone from the United States, the Grand Sheikh of Egypt, okay. Taliban, however, were not persuaded and went forward with their program, completely obliterating the carved stone statues which had adorned the side of a mountain for almost 2,000 years. That was the thing that I just considered unforgivable. While the Muslim world debated the merits of the Taliban policy and the non-Muslim world deplored the destruction of this ancient Buddhist art, the Taliban continued with the demolition. The actions of the Taliban bring up an interesting but seemingly contradictory situation. When you look at the situation from the point of view of the Shahada, the Taliban can rightly say they did nothing wrong. Yet to Western minds, their actions appear very wrong. You betcha. In the Taliban's understanding, they were merely destroying idols or graven images, as the Bible would label them. In fact, Taliban representatives expressed their puzzlement at the opposition from the Jews and the Christians, whose own religious book, the Bible, also requires destruction of idols. See Exodus 20, verses 1 to 5. All right. Shall we go on? I don't think so. I think you're thinking, dude, is every show going to be about your views on Islam? And if so, I'm not listening to the Dixon James podcast anymore. And I really am sorry if it appears that way. But hey, weeks change, things go on. This happens to be the book I picked up that was in my office. And it is something that's in my mind all the time. I'm trying to understand the world, but I am concerned about clashes of civilizations. I am concerned about these threats to people who, you know, this asshole idiot who made a movie that was offensive to Muslims and I'm glad to know he's in jail now, safest place for him. I'm not championing. I'm not cheering on people who want to insult Islam and stir things up. I would never support somebody who wants to publicly burn the Quran to show that Christianity is the way to go. And you know, these people are just crazy. But I don't believe you got to go around killing people who draw cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad, and that why Muhammad should be any more special than anybody else. I guess the last part here that was interesting. Oh, I forgot. We're gonna end here. We're gone on for too long. I'm sorry. Stay tuned. This will not be only. There'll be other things. I promise. I'll take up another topic. It is Thanksgiving. I hope you are being thankful for all the blessings you have in your lives, and I hope nobody comes after me for thinking that I am just here to stir up shit. I'm not. Bye for now. Some important points I left out, and I'd like to add them in now. Muslim civilization preserved the knowledge of the ancient Greeks and others and passed it on to Europe. While Europe was in the Dark Ages, the Islamic world was the center for learning, inquiry, and science. The foundations for modern science and the scientific method were laid by Muslim researchers from the 9th to the 13th century. Muslim scholars invented algebra, made astounding astronomical discoveries, systematized chemistry, developed the practice of medicine to the highest standards in the world at that time, and made great strides in many other fields. Islamic civilization left a legacy upon which modern civilization is built. The Western Europeans who studied in Muslim universities took what they had learned and built upon it. Good to know. Good to know.
Anybody else in this world alone. You smiled at me, baby, and I could see my life planned out ahead. You took my hand and it felt so good, and this is what you said. Baby, won't you be my man?
That would be your first clue. Just realized when I checked in on Foursquare that I've been here 102 times, or 102 check-ins, many more than 102 times, but done that. You know, this is my place, Buffers Park, and it's a nice day. Today is the first day I woke up, and the cars were completely frosted over. I actually had to go into the garage, get a scraper. Oh, my wonderful wife She organizes that garage. She does everything. I mean, it's really quite amazing. There were five scrapers hanging up along the wall because, you know, you misplace one, you can't find it. Oh, shit, into Canadian Tire, you buy another one. And now somehow she was able to track them all down from their various hiding spots and got them neatly lined up, ready. So, of course, I could open the garage door, walk in, here's a scraper, clear the window, get in the car, drive to Bluffers by the Park, or what's it called? Check my Foursquare, you'll find out where I had breakfast. And now a few minutes just to chat with you here on this glorious Saturday morning. I had thought I had all the material I needed to finish off the podcast last week, and I slapped in, you know, what I do is I record, you know, a clip. I usually end up about 20 minutes, and then I go home and I upload them onto my computer, my MacBook, my dying, very old MacBook, which can't be updated. I'm going to get to that in a minute, you know. Well, I don't want to pay for a new operating system. Anyway, and then I just slap these clips in and put a piece of music in between, as you well know, if you've listened at all. And put in this 20-minute clip, and there was nothing there. Like, it was, I had left the recorder on by accident last week. And so it was just the noises of me listening to a podcast in the car, getting out of the car, sticking this thing in my bag. And so, boom, what do you know? I got a whole lot of space freed up. And that's why I'm talking to you now Saturday morning, so I can race home, give you this clip, and end this podcast, which is what you are listening to right now. Yeah. I want to talk about my iPhone 5. I got it yesterday. I've had it for a total of 7 hours, my new iPhone. My first ever iPhone, I'm pleased to say. And I don't even know if I like it yet. I mean, I love the design. I even love the box it came in. It looks neat. That screen, holy shit. I thought, I'm an old man. I'm going to have trouble reading. I'm going to take the glasses off, holding it 2 inches from my left eyeball. It's beautiful. It's so easy to see. I'm looking at, you know, Twitter, this stream, and I can read normally. It's amazing. Very, very sharp. So that's definitely a plus. Even Facebook. We're never going to use this thing for Facebook. I think what bothered me at first was, first of all, I couldn't sync it to iTunes because you need the latest version of iTunes, and to get that, you need the latest version of the operating system, whatever fucking cat they're on now. And so that pissed me off. But then I went to iCloud, and suddenly all my contacts are loaded onto my little iPhone. So good, we're good. You know, it works. It's wonderful in that respect. But I still don't know, and part of it is because I'm so used to having the iPad, you know, that, well, why would I have two? So I got an iPhone, an iPad, and an iPod. And I'm thinking, come on, man, this is overkill. But I'm hoping this iPhone, ooh, geez, it's right in my pocket right now. I'm going to put it in my hand. Yeah, here we go. Ooh, she's a beaut. I love the black, too. We'll replace it. And so, of course, I loaded up some music. Oh, you know, again, go to iCloud. All the music you've purchased in the past, that whole Animals retrospective, highly recommended, by the way, is here on it now. I could listen to the Animals in the car. Just plug it in. And so that was very, very nice. But all the other tunes I've got on my iPod, I can't sync because I can't sync to iTunes, and I'm going to have to find some workaround there, which I'm sure there is. Until I buy my new iMac, and I'm not doing that until the new ones come out. But I'm long overdue for a new computer, so goddamn, it's me more than anybody else on this planet who has made Apple rich, because I've been buying since 1985, okay? Apple, 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 as they're fond of saying on Discultured. By the way, it's great. They've got Dave Brodbeck and Bob Goyette working with Anthony Marco on that Hey, You Guys! Podcast. What is it called? Best episode ever. And it's entertaining listening because those guys, they like to talk, all of them. So it's a lot of fun. You can just join along for the ride, you know. It's not tight and scripted. It's just let loose and talk about stuff we like. So that's fun. Oh my God, we're eating up the time here, me talking about all these other people. But that's what we like to do in the Dixon Jeans, because I am part of this community. In fact, take away the I am, scratch that out, put in the word we are all part of this community, and it is a wonderful, damn fine community. So the iPhone, doing Twitter, Facebook, the photos, the camera, of course, I got it. What I wanted to do is, when I go out to the Only on a Saturday night to get drunk, no, to drink good beer, and talk with friends, I carry this heavy fucking backpack with my recorder, my digital recorder, the thing I'm holding in my hand right now, because I decided I'm not going to record yet from the iPhone. We'll save that for an experiment later on. But I carry this thing around, and then I carry my whole iPad so I can check in on Twitter. That's the only reason I bring that. Well, no, I bring it to, yeah, send messages, post pictures of beer. But I really, it weighs a ton. It's a pack of stuff. And I really wanted to simplify my life. And the real goal was to have this one little device that I could go out with and not need to carry anything else, just my iPhone. And that's exciting. And so even this morning, I made my first challenge, except for carrying this recorder, I left my iPad at home. So I think the true value of the iPhone will come when I realize I don't need my iPad. God damn it, eh? The catch, I haven't yet been able to get all my mail. I got my Gmail, I got my Mac mail, but I have not yet been able to put my Rogers mail on. I get this fucking message from Yahoo, where's your, whatchamacallit, you know, your password 1,000 times. And I Googled it, and other people, Yahoo keeps asking me for my password, what do I do? And I haven't solved that problem yet. And I know there's a way, and very soon I'll be getting all my email on here. And, of course, I don't really want to be using the iPhone for email. That will go back to the iPad, you know? Fuck, I'm going to end up carrying everything around. And then, of course, with all my music right now, my iPod, I promised I'd give it to my son. And because the volume button is stuck on his little iPod mini or whatever he's got, and yet I don't want to give it up now until I can get my music off it and so on. But you don't need to know all the details, do you? You just need to know that I'm one happy dude because I got a new toy. But really, it's kind of with mixed feelings. Like when I sat in the store, I ordered this thing, took forever to come. There's no way I'm gonna fucking wait in line at an Apple store until they're willing to serve me. So I thought, well, I'll just try my local Rogers shop at my local Cedar Bray Mall. And that was a mistake because it took 2 extra days. It was shipped finally to their location up north and then delivered to the store. Then I got to the store, they were just unpacking, and the guy got snarly with me. And I said, I'm not leaving here till I have my iPod. I know it's in that back room. And he went and got it, and it took forever for him to get on a computer with Rogers to get this thing going. They had to try 2 different SIM cards before this thing would even accept, and there was a lot of crap. Suddenly she's hitting me, well, you're going to have a new contract and a new bill and end up paying a whole lot of fucking money for this thing. And I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, you asshole. At the time of purchase, I was thinking, dude, you have just made the biggest fucking mistake you've made in a very long time. You didn't need a fucking iPhone. I absolutely loved my Motorola Razr, but it was just dying. The battery wouldn't hold a charge. And that was a phone. And the first time I used this fucking thing as a phone, I didn't like it. I hold this flat thing up to my head. Like, I can't even fucking hear things. It's a shitty phone. It's called an iPhone. It's a shitty phone. Come on. Nothing compared to that Motorola Razr. For small, stylish, convenient, functional. I just loved it, you know. And so that was the first problem. I got into an argument with this guy. Finally got agreed. Just, I'll pay everything. I'll fucking fight with Rogers later. Just give me the fucking phone. Well, it took at least an hour to get this thing ready and set up and handed over to me. And then, of course, as soon as I plug it in, realize I can't sync to fucking iTunes because it's the wrong version and I can't update. That pissed me off, and I'm thinking, God damn it, man, what the hell did you do? Why did you have to join the crowd and be like everybody else? I got an iPhone 5, and you don't because you got the 4S. And anyway, got into a few arguments with Siri, and now Siri is cool. That it's fun. I wasted an awful lot of trying time last night, thanks to a friend out in the West Coast asking if it calls me Scarborough Dude, and Siri insists that I'm Ken, and it just will not answer to Scarborough Dude. It won't tell me I'm Scarborough Dude. It pulls it up. It shows me the name. So here you are. What do you want me to do? Google it? I'm saying, no, I want you to call me Scarborough Dude. So I had a 5-minute fucking fight with Siri trying to get it to call me Scarborough Dude. It refuses. I'm going to start that battle again today. I'm going to teach Siri to call me by my name. All right, I got to end there. I guess that's it. It's the fun. It's a toy. It's slave labor in China. It's all kinds of shit. It might be my downfall. Just like that big fucking TV screen I got at Christmas time. Remember how worried I was about that thing taking over my life? And it has taken over my life. I watch so much shit TV. Vegas. Wow. Now, there's a show I'm really enjoying. And Nashville. Another fucking show. Shit shows that I really enjoy. God damn it. I'm walking...